Yasmin.
Hi, Jasmine. He hasn't come on yet.
Okay. How are you?
Doing good.
Good to hear that. How's your husband?
Well, my husband's fine. It was my son who had open heart surgery this past week. It was an emergency.
Your son?
Yes.
Oh.
It was quite a shock.
Wow, what happened to him?
Well, he went for his physical and a stress test, and he didn't do well on his stress test. But what they found was he had 4 blocked arteries, really bad. They wouldn't even let him go home. He had to have emergency surgery. They said he was, any time, he could have had a massive heart attack and probably wouldn't have pulled through. And he's never been sick. He's never been in the hospital except when he was 6 years old and had his tonsils removed. So, and he's a big man. Tony and I are we're short and small. But he doesn't look like he belongs to us. He's 6'2", and I thought he was about 182, but he told me today he was 200. He's not fat. He's just a big man, you know. Took after my grandpa, my paternal grandpa.
Oh, my God. But Baruch Hashem, they found out that, you know.
Yeah.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yay. Does anybody have a question?
No.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Anybody have a question?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I was reading something some time ago about the hair, the beard, the hair. What is the significance of hair on a person's body? I think I read that it keeps the negative energy away.
Not sure where you read it. Hair, it depends on the location of the body. There are 13 places on the face where the beard, 13 places within the beard, and there are 9 places of hair on the body. And the total of 13 and 9 is 22. So it also relates to the 22 letters of the alphabet. But essentially, hair is light that is not able to be revealed in a normal way. So it bursts through the skin because the nature of light is to share. So it cannot be contained. And so the idea of hair is essentially it's light. And so in that sense, what you read is correct, or what you remember is correct, because light is always keeping negativity away. It cannot handle the light, cannot handle the energy.
So does it come down like in strands, like the strands of the hair? Like each strand?
I don't know what you mean by strand. Each hair has a follicle. The follicle is bursting through the skin, and then it grows from there.
Okay.
But each hair is like a funnel, a channel for the light that it represents.
So why was the olive oil or the oil poured over the head?
on where it dripped down on the beard of the anointed individual.
As I said, it depends on where on the body the hair is. So hair on the top of the head is a channel for the energy of judgment. It's drawing, it's an antenna to draw the energy of judgment. The hair on the beard is the energy of mercy. So oil represents chachma, wisdom. So the oil that is placed on the hair and then drips onto the beard is representing the diminishment of judgment and the acceptance of judgment being left column, accepting the binding or accepting the control of the right column. There are a lot deeper aspects to that. There's a article about hair on my website that comes from the RE. I don't remember the title, but you can read it. If you search for Rabbi Isaac Luria, there will be a number of articles on that area.
Okay.
One of them is about on the Hilula of the Ari. We just didn't get that far through the all of those articles.
And also, you know, the animals have lots of hair, you know, from the lions to the sheep to the goats to the, you know. So there are also, of course, part of creation. So it would be, from that standpoint, how do we look at that with the animals that have, I mean, we're have hair because, you know, animals were created before man, of course. So do they kind of coincide? I mean,
I apologize. I pushed the wrong button and I was muted for a while.
Oh, okay.
So I did not hear what the last hair on the animals.
Kingdom. Yeah, animal kingdom.
Again, it's the same idea, but it's at a lower level in this
right.
this frame and in our level of existence. The animal seems to be lower than, but it's the same idea. There's certain areas of the animal's body where the hair is mercy and other areas where it's judgment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to have to look that article up and read through it.
Don't you have something
questions?
About in on the Shem website? Is it face reading, maybe? That you've mentioned
about
the
hair? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the hair is in. There's discussion of hair in the Zohar. That's on the Parasha of Hazinu, and then there's a discussion of some of the hair aspects in the face and hand reading page as well. Any other questions?
I was hoping that you would explain the beating of the willows, the actual ritual. Last night you mentioned that it had to be on the ground. And, of course, we needed the five so-called letters. Were we supposed to make seven rounds? I know one site said hit the willows five times, but that's what we were a little confused today. So I was hoping you would tell us a little bit more of the beating of the willows.
The seven rounds represents the seven circles, the seven tablefold that is done on Hoshana Rabbah, the seventh day. Each of the 6 days of the first 6 days of Sukkot, we make one circle.
Right.
Then you make seven on the seventh day. You make seven. 7 plus 6 is 13, and the circles represents unity within the frame of Chesed.
Okay. Now that was with the lulav and etrog, though.
Yes. But the ritual of the beating of the willows is a separate aspect that is at the end of the Sukkot.
Right.
It's the last action you do while you're in the sukkah. You go outside and you beat the willows, and the willow being the left column represents judgment. So when you beat them, you're sweetening the judgment. And you're doing so with the consciousness of the Mansapah, which is the final, the end times, the final days. And that's what you're, that's the essence of the ritual. That's the consciousness of the ritual.
Okay, but do you go around seven times with the willows in your hand? Or do you just hold the willows?
So you take the five willows, you wrap a rubber band around the bottom, or you hold them all in your hand, unify the five, and you beat the five times. But each time you beat it, the first time you go mem sofit, the second time nun sofit, and so forth.
Right.
There's five final letters. So you're beating the willows five times. It's all about sweetening the judgment at the end of days. am I not being clear?
Well, I'm not sure if you're actually going around or within the sukkah
No, this is after Alela L'Shabeah of your prayer. You've gone around seven times, then you go finish the prayer. You're going around seven times, you return the Torah to the Ark, you do the Musaf for the holiday, and then you go through, some people do the Psalms of the day, and then you end up saying Aleinu L'Shabeah. Some people will sing Adon Olam at the end, and then you go outside of the sukkah. And that's the last action you do in the sukkah until on Simchat Torah.
Okay, well, we were following the art row Siddur, so we did it a little bit differently.
Okay. I'm just going the way I was taught. So there's always many different minhagim, many different customs for these things. So there's nothing wrong with what you did if you followed the art scroll.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry you broke up, but I didn't understand what you said.
Somebody asked a question, and neither one of us heard it.
Yeah, I want to ask a question. Ready.
Go ahead, Jasmine.
I just wanted to know a little bit more about the dinner of the Leviathan. Never heard of that before.
give me 30 seconds to get settled, and then I'll tell you. What do you know about the Leviathan?
Do you want anybody to answer?
Yeah, anybody to answer. Let's start with what people know about the Leviathan. Anybody can answer.
Okay, well, it's mentioned in the last prayer that we say as we leave the sukkah. We say farewell to the sukkah. Not too long ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, Leviton was the code word for Moses. Some commentaries say that the prayer for saying farewell to the sukkah has to do with the skin of the Leviton will become the skin of the sukkah, and that we would eat that flesh of the fig. But I think most of that is symbolic, so you take over from there.
Well, all of that is metaphor. All of that is correct. Does anybody know anything else about the Leviathan?
It has to do with Torah.
Yes. Has anybody heard about that God created every creature, male and female?
Yes.
But
He killed one.
He killed the female so that she didn't bear any children. The metaphor is if she had been born children, in which she would have filled up the world because they were so huge. The Leviathan, as Hannah said, Moses is a big fish. The code words from the Zohar is a fish that swims in water. The fish is a tzaddik. And the biggest tzaddik is Moses. And the Leviathan represents that. Now, there is a midrash about the blue bull, a huge blue animal that lives on the land while the Leviathan lives on the sea. And that at the end of the time, that fight between the Leviathan and the blue bull will take place, and the Leviathan will be, they will both essentially be killed, but the Leviathan will be the victor. And since the Leviathan is then dead, and it's a fish, it's the meal of the tzaddikim representing the eating of the tree of life in a balanced way. That is both what the Leviathan represents. The Leviathan represents a tzaddik who has learned Torah, who has done good deeds, and he is defending against the land animal, which is the nation of Edom and the other 70 nations. And it's essentially a metaphorical story about what we are doing on this earth. We're studying the words of God in the Torah, eating those words metaphorically, we're absorbing them, and then we're utilizing them in our lives. We're becoming tzaddikim and tzaddikim. And that's essentially the midrash about the Leviathan. And so the last action that we do on Simchat Torah, after all the hakafot on Simchat Torah, we go back into the sukkah to say goodbye to the sukkah till next year. And it's called the Kiddush of the Leviathan. What is Kiddush? It's the manifestation of the energy of the prayer. So we do a Kiddush in the Sukkah as the last action of this period of the 23 days. And remember what those 23 days are. 10 days. Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, building your vessel from the 11th to the 20th of Tishrei, we're drawing the light of Chesed into the world, essentially fulfilling our desires, and then the Shmini Atzeret, which is the balancing of that, drawing of that light, and Simchat Torah, which is creating the surrounding light that is the potential revelation of your task that can be done during this year. That's what the circles, the dancing with the Torah is all about. And the last action is to transform ourselves into tzaddikim, that we could maintain ourselves that way throughout the year. And so we do that by drawing the light through the Kiddush, through the one, within the sukkah, which is an antenna to draw chesed. And so every action during these 23 days is designed to reveal light, create the year, what will happen during the year. And based on that, go through the rest of the year revealing the light that we potentially created during the Simchat Torah circles. Because our actions transform surrounding light into inner light. Now that I've confused everything, you want me to clarify anything? Is anybody still there?
Yeah. I thought farewell to the sukkah was at the end of I thought Shemini Atzeret was when we tarry with Hashem, and then it's that's it.
There are some people who believe that you can go and eat on Shemini Atzeret in the sukkah. The
right.
Kabbalists say no. Shemini Atzeret is totally separate. Shemini Atzeret is the assembly where you have done your sharing to the 70 nations, and now you are communing with Hashem on Shemini Atzeret. You are transforming from praying for dew into praying for rain, from female waters into male waters. And we spoke about that. That was it last night or the night before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I was always taught that you tarry with Hashem, and you could still eat a meal or a snack in the sukkah. You just no longer said blessings other than that whatever food you're eating, you're going to say a blessing over it. And
right. But you're not saying a blessing for sitting in the sukkah. And the Kabbalists say, you know, it's not recommended to go into the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, but there are many, many groups that say otherwise. So you have to determine what is your God, the way you were taught. We all go through this.
So, can I? So tonight we were not supposed to eat or do anything in the sukkah.
Correct. That's what the Kabbalists say. Others say, go ahead and sit in the sukkah, have your meal in the sukkah, but don't say the blessing about sitting in the sukkah. Just say your blessing over the food normally. And there are essentially practical aspects to this. Because if you have moved your home into the sukkah, if you have lived in the sukkah for 7 days, which in most parts of North America we don't really do, but there are places, Los Angeles is one, where people move into the sukkah. They live in the sukkah, they study in the sukkah, they pray in the sukkah. They have their minions in the sukkah. Everything is done in the sukkah because there's only 176 hours to sit in the sukkah. So as much as you can do in the sukkah, people try and do. The Kabbalists try and do. So practically speaking, your food, your kitchen material, you know, is in the sukkah. So it's impractical for you to move on Hoshana Rabbah after staying up all night to try and move things out of the sukkah back into your house. And so as a practical matter, people will eat in the sukkah, but they will not say the blessing of Leshev Basukkah.
Okay, well, that's what we were used to doing. And when will the prayer for farewell to the sukkah come? It won't come until Simchat Torah?
It comes after the last hachafot, last circle, the seventh circle of dancing with the Torah on Simchat Torah.
Is there a video?
We're usually at the synagogue at that time. Yeah.
There were two people speaking, so I didn't hear either one. Does anybody have any questions? You want to continue? What, make a comment?
I just said we're usually at the synagogue at that time, at Simchat Torah.
Yes, that's true for most people.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Is there a video from Kabbalah that shows step by step on how to conduct prayers in the sukkah? I mean, there's lots of videos on how to build one. But, you know, this day you do that, and there are some printouts, but like a video that shows you how to handle the lulav. And so forth and so on. From start to...
I have never seen a video like that. I just learned it as I was learning Kabbalah because I was constantly praying with the Kabbalah Center. So all of their actions, all of their meals, everything was, you know, absorbed in practice. I've never seen a video.
What we learned by following what was in the prayer book for Sukkot. And Hoshana Rabbah and, you know,
Hanok.
Yes.
Tonight and tomorrow, we don't supposed to eat in the sukkah.
Correct.
Wow.
And then
last
tomorrow night, on Friday, you're not supposed to eat in the sukkah except to go into the sukkah for the kiddush after the prayer of Simchat Torah.
So when would it be?
When will what be?
That last kiddush. Tomorrow night? No.
Generally around noon to 1 o'clock on Simchat Torah on Friday.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I went to the service tonight and then we did the kiddush in the sukkah, but the kiddush was not made with wine; it was made with vodka and a piece of bread, and then we went inside again to do the hakafot. But of course, man is the one that do that, and then they had dinner. And the sukkah, I just didn't stay.
Jasmine, this is the minhag, the custom, the tradition that the Chabad organization follows. Every group has their own traditions. I teach what I was taught, which is based on the Kabbalah, what the Ari writes. There's a lot of differences. If you make your study, if you read as Hannah did the Art Scroll Siddur, and then you listen to what I say, you see differences. They're both right. You have to find what is right for you. Right now, you are very comfortable and very at home in that synagogue that you go to. That's all good. So there's no right or wrong here. It's the same idea that everything is always relative to the souls involved. That's why the souls are in a particular synagogue. Why the souls live in a certain area of the world. Everything is connected to the tikkun of the soul. And what is the best way for that soul to make its tikkun? And all of these different customs relate to that. Always remember that there are 12 tribes in Israel. And each one of them had their own customs, their own ways of prayer. And a lot of people in today's world, we don't know what tribe their soul is connected to. And we don't understand why they feel more comfortable doing one thing or another. But, you know, if you listen to your intuition, you'll know what is the right thing for you to do. I'm asked a question, and I answer it based on what I have been taught. And you see, Hannah has read the Art Scroll Siddur, which, again, is one of the 12 tribes. Everything is relative. You need to do the research for yourself. What feels right for you? Try it. One year you do it one way, one year you do it the other way. Feel the energy. What is comfortable for you? What is right for you?
Well, there I guess no it's getting right out of here. The getting out of the comfort zone.
A synagogue is a comfort zone. Somebody just said something, so. But what I was saying is every synagogue is a comfort zone. For the people in that synagogue, if it wasn't a comfort zone, they wouldn't be praying in that synagogue.
What if you're not comfortable in the synagogue, but there's nowhere else that you can be comfortable other than in your own home? Maybe that was a question
Judaism,
I should ask you personally. Maybe that wasn't for the conference.
It's a very valid question, and it has a very simple but uncomfortable answer.
Please.
Within Judaism, there is this, what's the word for it? There is this tension between you having a personal connection to Hashem and you having the need to have a community. Do you need a community to have a relationship to Hashem? The answer is no. So why do you need a minyan? Because there are certain prayers that strengthen your connection to Hashem that you need 10 people or 10 men, depending on your minhag, your custom, that you need 10, one for each of the sefirot, to draw the full and complete structure of the light of that particular issue. So you have accepted, Hana, you have accepted less than we want, and you receive less energy because of the community that you're involved with. But you have justified it by saying, and validly so, this is the only place I can go. Now, I was in the Kabbalah Center. I had a minyan. I attended it 3 times a day. I was constantly involved with it. And then that tension between going to the minyan but wanting to meditate and have commune, so to speak, with Hashem, utilize the teachings of the Sefer Yetzirah to have a personal connection to Hashem, that became my desire, and it took me away from my comfort zone of the synagogue. Was I wrong? No. Am I still there? No. People go through a process of growth, spiritual growth. Sometimes you feel the need for a minyan and a community, and sometimes you feel the need for a direct connection. And finding that balance at every stage of your life is part of the process of spiritual growth. Again, there is no one right answer. You do what is appropriate for you.
Oh my God.
When I started to study Kabbalah, I took a 12-week basic class, which I now teach over 19 weeks. But I took this 12-week basic class. At the end of that, I went to a community Rosh Hashanah in New York from Los Angeles. And when I came back, I was taking 2 classes a night, 4 nights a week. And I drove each night 30 miles each way, maybe 40 miles each way. Because that's what Los Angeles is like. You drive a lot. And I would take the recordings and I'd listen to them as I drove. Because I had a hunger for the information. But I also felt the tension for the community because I felt the strength of what could take place when you do Rosh Hashanah with 2,000 people, all connected to the consciousness of the Kabbalah. And then I received a message that it was time for me to leave that comfort zone and start to travel across country, and you see the results.
and I've now settled in Atlanta, and I'm starting to be the leader of a minion. I'm starting to lead the prayers, which I wasn't doing for the last 7 years. I was just meditating. I was listening to the reading of the Torah myself out of a chumash or out of a computer. You go through a process. Sometimes you do this, sometimes you do that. As long as you understand that this is what's right for you at this time. You know, Hannah, excuse my revelation of your conversion, but you've said it yourself many times. When you converted, this was the community that you found, that you had. When you went to Israel, you had a different community, and then for whatever reason you came back, and you have the same community, and you don't feel totally fulfilled by it. But you work on the board, you interact with the people, you try and elevate the consciousness so they're doing more. That's what I'm doing by saying the prayers. Because this minion collapsed about a month ago because the person who was leading the prayers, about six months ago, the person that was leading the prayer made a inappropriate statement about race relations, and he was fired. And the person who took over from him a month ago had an accident where he fell off the dock, and there was literally no one who knew enough of Hebrew to read the prayers, let alone really understand what they were doing. So I stepped forward and started to lead the prayers. This is what am I doing this for? The same thing that Fana goes on the board of directors for, to elevate the consciousness of the people to do more. As this year is the energy of doing more, of bowing to Hashem in order to walk with Hashem. What does it mean when the Torah says Noach walked with Hashem? Hanoch ben Yared walked with Hashem. All of these prophets walked with Hashem. What is the meaning of this term? You have to experience it. If you don't do the meditations, you can't experience walking with Hashem. But if you don't accept the yoke of Torah, if you don't accept the mitzvot, you're not getting all of the light at this point. Does it mean you're wrong? The answer is no. And that's what I strongly strive to get across to people. Will you stay in this place where you are right now? The answer is no. Because you will grow spiritually, or you will fall spiritually in order to grow higher spiritually. This is the process. As you grow spiritually, you get closer to Hashem. What is right for you? There will be times when you will need to be meditating on your own and not be in a minion. There'll be other times when you absolutely have a desire for the community and to help grow the community. Are you wrong at either one of those, or are you right at either one of those? The answer is you're right at both of them. For that moment in time, accept change. Wrap your arms around change.
Get out of your comfort zone.
Please.
Well, my case is totally opposite. Kind of bizarre, because at the synagogue where I go, especially women, they don't make me feel, comfortable at all, because they know that I'm not Jewish. So they ignore me a lot. especially the wife of the rabbi.
Oh, the rabbi. Yes.
So,
but that's part of you.
But I'm,
but that's
but I'm
part
there.
Of your cocoon. Yes.
There you go.
You go,
but I'm there.
You're there. You go to hear the Torah. And that's
yeah,
the price you
to
have
interact.
To pay as part of your cocoon in this lifetime to hear the Torah, to come closer to the Torah.
Baruch Hashem.
We haven't asked what... Baruch Hashem is right. We haven't asked what took place in the last lifetime that you need to experience this. But the fact is you overcome that feeling of rejection, of discomfort, in order to be closer to the Torah. And that is your tikkun at this moment. I have another student in Salt Lake City with a similar situation. She was in a community that she loved, but they didn't read the Torah. They walked to the Chabad organization to hear the Torah every Shabbat. They were close by, they walked. And the leader of that community died, and the community died with him. So she is now in the Chabad organization, and she's struggling with the strictures of the Chabad organization that she didn't have earlier in her process. But she's still there. She's still listening to the Torah every week. She's still sharing with the community every week.
Hey, Honok, what I'm getting at all this is to have the right conscious as to wherever you go in this, whichever synagogue. If you have the right conscious, then that will sustain you through your uncomfortable surroundings, you know, that you're experiencing. So having the right conscious going in, you're there to learn the Torah. And so it doesn't matter, I say this very lightly, it doesn't matter what anybody else does, you're there with the right conscious. So you're going to get the right thing that you need that day.
Correct. What you've gotten out of this discussion is beneficial. Now you have to go live it. Because generally speaking, females need community. So when a female goes into a community that they're just cold to her, they're not ostracizing her. They're just saying, we're different than you. It's uncomfortable. But how important is the Torah to you? And that's the question. I've probably taught in the last 15 years, I have probably taught in excess of 300-400 students. How many are still studying with me? Well, many of them study. They'll call me once in a while. This is what's going on in my life. What do you think I should do? And I share with what insights I can give. And then I won't hear from them for months. Is that wrong? Is that right? Should I be hurt by it? Of course not. That's where they are in their process. This world is controlled by the negative system. And we've all been kidnapped by the negative system. And it's only through the Torah that we can break free of that slavery. Now, when I first heard that statement, this is the only way to break free is through the Torah, I said, well, this is a program of the Kabbalah. This is what they're promoting. This isn't real. There's got to be other ways. But today, I'm making that same statement to you that my teachers made to me. Because I have watched, I have observed, I'm aware, I'm energy sensitive. And I know, for me, there is this one and only path. Sometimes I will be closer, sometimes I will be further away. Sometimes I will feel badly, but I'll pretend that I'm happy. Because I've learned if you fake it, you will make it. Human beings have a cycle. The Torah has a cycle. Life has a cycle. And when you are in sync with all of those different cycles, you are being fed the energy that you need to achieve your tikkun. It's a very simple rule to live by. Don't worry, be happy. You know the song. It's spread around the country about 10 years ago. Just be happy. Whatever you do, there's a huge avera, there's a huge sin for a man to waste seed. We've spoken about it a number of times. Does it happen? Yes, it does. Should I be devastated by the fact that it happened? No. Whatever you do, be happy. That keeps your connection to Hashem. Hannah's son just had open heart surgery. She's worried. She's nervous. She's upset. I hope, Hannah, I'm not putting words in your mouth. But
no,
as a human being, this is natural. These are natural reactions. But what is the path of Torah? Be happy. Baruch Hashem, it got fixed before it caused serious problems. You can choose to look at it, oh, he's got to live the rest of his life with all of these concerns, which is the way my mother would have reacted to me having that, if she had been alive when I had that. But in the path of Torah, the path of Kabbalah, whatever happens, be happy because it's coming to you from Hashem. It's coming to you to achieve your tikkun. It's coming to you to assist you in getting closer to Hashem. How can you be unhappy with that? Say again.
Gamsu letoba, that's what it says in Hebrew.
Yes, gamsu letoba. Also, this is for the good. Whatever you do, be happy. Anytime you feel you're not happy, put a smile on your face and pretend. Whenever you are happy, the people that I am praying with, I used to joke and say I attended a minyan of wheelchairs because there's a lot of people in a nursing home in these buildings that come, they're wheeled in and that they don't really say the prayers any longer, but their tradition, their custom is to be in a synagogue on Saturday morning. But now I understand, and what did I say to them on Rosh Hashanah? Everybody has a tikkun. Your tikkun, sitting in that wheelchair, is to smile at the person who's helping you. because you don't know when that smile will lift their spirits. Hashem has put me in this situation for whatever his reasons are. Do I need to know what his reasons are? Not really. I just need to know that I'm doing the right thing for me in this situation. And that is to continue to teach as long as people are willing to learn. And to smile when I go down the hallway. The restaurant is too far from where I live for me to walk. So I am in a wheelchair. As I walk, as I roll down the hallway, people say, "How are you?" I say, "I'm rolling it along." They laugh. I bring joy to people. Is it harmful to be in a wheelchair? Is it a horrible thing to be in a wheelchair? Everybody has their own opinion of these things. There's no right or wrong. It's where you are. And know that wherever you are right now is going to change this time next year. Maybe you'll be higher, maybe you'll be lower, but you will not remain the same. And that, to me, is a very happy thought. But say that to someone who is born in the sign of Taurus, and they're going to run away from you because the Taurus likes the comfort zone. Have I been preaching long enough?
No, that's what I'm preaching.
It's been a great preaching time.
Baruch Hashem. Are there any other questions?
I have a question.
Randy, you know, it's nice to hear from you.
Well, thank you. Normally, if it's odd, it occurs with me. I had a tooth taken out that was giving me a lot of trouble. And on the right side of my face. But it affected my big toe on my left side of my body. So since it's right side, left side, was that kind of like a cocoon to get a balance, a middle column?
It could be. It could be that since your tooth made you uncomfortable, that you were supposed to hold on to it, and the effect of having it taken out means that your toe was, you were manifesting the energy incorrectly. In either case, be happy.
I'm happy. I tried to keep my tooth for a whole year.
In the normal Western world, if you have a tooth that the dentist says needs to come out, you take it out, just like Brandy did. Is that right? Is that wrong? I heard somebody ask a very simple question. Not really. He made a statement, and it was just today. When you go face your maker face to face at the end of 190 years, the end of 400 years, the end of 1,000 years, you face your maker and he's not going to ask you what you did, who you helped. He's going to ask you one thing. Did you do everything you could do with what I gave you to do? What I gave you to do?
So he gave you 32 teeth. How many of us have had our wisdom teeth removed? Because God forbid those teeth get moved around and we don't look quite as pretty as we would if we had had them removed. I'm guilty because at 18, that's what my mother told me to do. And what was the result of that? She tried to kill me when I was 19 because she wouldn't let them do an appendectomy because they couldn't confirm to her that that's what I had. Now, obviously, my mother didn't try to kill me, truly. But the result was the same. She was delaying the operation, and I did almost die because of it. She was doing it out of love and out of her fears and all of the rest of it. This is all tikkun. Everything that happens is from tikkun. Brandy lost her tooth, it's tikkun. She has a problem in her left toe, it's tikkun. Now, do you want to know what to do teshuvah so that the big toe pain goes away and never comes back? Do you want to know why you had problems with your tooth and you need to do teshuvah so that you'll grow your tooth back? Oh, well, most of us will laugh when someone says, I can grow my teeth back. But if you Google replacing teeth, you'll find some articles where people have done so through their tikkun. But usually they're not people who study Kabbalah, so they don't really understand what took place. It's only by studying the Kabbalah, by studying the Torah, that you have this sense of how the spiritual system works, the laws that the spiritual system follows. That's the gift of Hashem, to understand the spiritual system, because then you can see how it impacts and affects the physical world.
Well, I have to fix on my right side. Of my body. Lost hearing in my right ear, bunion on my right foot. A bunch of things on my right side. Oh my gosh.
And it's coming from the left side of the brain.
So for you, it's a lot of it.
Probably.
And you're practicing the prophetic position, so with your meditations, I'm sure.
Of course, you need to go back to that.
Oh, so now you know why your right side isn't working so well. God forbid.
Oh my goodness. Funny.
Any other questions? Have a beautiful holiday. Hag Sameach.
Hag
Sameach, everyone. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
I'm planning to have class tomorrow. I'm not sure quite what it will be. So I know there will be a Zohar class at 7 o'clock. So shalom to all.
Shalom.